Good afternoon. I'm Mark Allen with Gaper.io, and I'm here today with Jeff Silverman, the co-founder of Laconia. Good afternoon, Jeff. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to be here.
Great. I'm glad you could join us today. So to start with, can you share a brief background of yourself and your work experience?
Oh, sure. I'd love to. So I was born and bred in Boston, Massachusetts, went to school down in New Orleans, Tulane University, Green Wave. And for the last 30 plus years, I've lived in New York City with my wife and three kids. And our dog, Rosie. If I don't mention the dog, I get yelled at by the children. Graduating Tulane, I was a history major, but did not really know what I wanted to do. It was pretty lost. But I did know I wanted to live in New York. So I moved to New York, opened up the newspapers when those existed at the time, went through the job searching board and got a job at a media rep firm in advertising and did that for about a year and then moved back to Boston and worked for CBS. And then I got into the startup world where two of my friends started an in-school advertising company based in Boston, and they needed someone to open up the office in New York. And I said, I want to go back to New York. I'll do it. So I went to a startup and worked there for a couple of years. And then I left and ended up selling the company very successfully. And I then tried to look at what I was going to do next. And a very smart woman told me that I should look, and this is in 90... probably more than you want to know, but this is in 95, 96, said to me, you should get into digital media. It's like getting into television when it was black and white. So I started interviewing with a bunch of companies, and I went to a company that had about 30, 35 employees at the time called DoubleClick. And that's where my media experience morphed into a technology. So I was one of the first employees at DoubleClick during its first 5 years, had multiple senior roles there over the years. And, saw the company go from 30, 35 people to about 3,000 globally. Saw it go from a private company to a public company. And I ran the media division the last year in 2001. Sold the media division. And then I took over a software company, an early stage software company, raised some money and venture from that. Ran that for 7 years. And then during the last 2 years there, I started doing some angel investing. And once I stepped down from that last company, I decided that, you know, I was take a year off, do some angel investing and see what I was going to do next. And fell in love with the angel investing side, started doing it with a bunch of friends, like a pseudo angel group, joined the New York Angels and met some great people. And during the New York Angels, I met my business partner, my best friend, David Arcara. And we then started Laconia Capital Group, which has been great, And I've never been this professionally happy in my entire life.
That's great. It sounds like you've had a very varied adventurous career.
All over the board.
Yeah. And it's great that you love what you do, because if you love what you do, then it's really not work, right?
I not only love what I do, but I love the people I work with. We have a great team. It's family. So I have family when I go home at night and I have family in the office.
Well, let's talk about Laconia then. You're a VC, a venture capital firm, I'm assuming.
Yep.
I mean, and do you mainly concentrate on seed, or do you do all types of investments, or do you have a specific specialty?
Yeah, so we are a seed-focused fund. We are B2B. We are headquartered in New York, and we make most of our investments in the Northeast, Boston, New York, Philly, D.C., and Toronto. We lead or co-lead most of our deals. We're sector agnostic. Our overall reaching thing that we're really focused on is we're looking for companies that are revolutionizing legacy industries and solving high pain point problems in the B2B space. So anything that has an analog workflow that's being disrupted by a digital solution, we're looking to invest in that company.
Wow. And knowing the different industries, there's a lot of that going on right now.
Yeah. You know what? It's very funny. Some people are like, are you too focused? And why are you not picking one sector like fintech? But to be honest, we've done a bunch of fintech deals like Aqualis, Extra Chef, which is in the food space. Aqualis is in, you know, the small business loan and now is expanding into banking and mortgaging. But we've also done some ad tech, which is our roots. We did a company called Promote IQ. We've just done a deal with Marpipe in the ad tech space. We've done some logistics. We've done some operation stuff. It's been great to be all over. We've done digital, our first one, the digital health space in Noteworth. So for me, coming in and learning about a different sector every day is what makes the job exciting. But you realize that every industry out there has a piece of it that has a legacy workflow solution that's waiting to be disrupted.
Yeah, and well, especially fintech. I think that's why a lot of people are investing in fintech now. It's, you know, they were the early adopters of the mainframe, and a lot of them still have mainframes.
So. Oh, it's crazy. My son was working at a company, and I won't say the company, out of Boston, for a summer internship a few years ago, and he calls me up. He's like, "Dad, when you were in college, did you Fortran? Was that the system?" I'm like, "Yeah, Fortran is the code I learned that in BASIC." I'm like, "Why?" He's like, "One of our largest customers, we have to build our system to plug into Fortran." I'm like, "Your largest customer is using Fortran?" He goes, "Yes." I'm like, "Oh God." And this company sold for $2.5 billion shortly after. So it's amazing what's out there still.
Well, yeah, and there's also a lot of COBOL still out there, as we found out when the pandemic hit.
Oh, a lot of COBOL. Well, it's funny. I was talking to a good friend of mine on Wall Street, who's a senior person at one of the top banks. And I said to him, you know, your systems. He's like, "Jeff, what we're trying to do is change all four wheels on our car going down I-95 at 95 miles an hour. He's like, "We just can't shut down our business for 2 years and evolve it, like reinvent it." He's like, "We got to do this on the fly."
Yeah. No, I know there's a lot of that going on. And they don't admit it publicly, but they do admit it behind closed doors. I know that.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So we talked about the pandemic and that hit in mid-March. Being a venture capitalist, how did that affect your company and then some of the companies that you fund?
Well, I think the good thing about our firm is we have a concentrated portfolio. We are not a spray and pray type of venture firm. It doesn't work for us. So I think it tested our thesis of the way we wanted to operate our business. So when the pandemic hit in early March, I'll take something from the former president, George Bush. It was the first phase was shock and awe. Mm-hmm. You know, we were able to, since we're concentrated portfolio, we were able to work with each of our founders really hands-on and be like, "Okay, breathe. Mm-hmm. Let's freeze hiring. Let's freeze some spend. You know, is this a 2-week issue? Is this a 1-month issue?" I don't think anybody thought initially it was going to be a 1-year issue plus. So, you know, when it first hit, it was really trying to just work with the founders, our amazing founders, and understand where we were at. The second phase was really the PPP. Again, these are small early stage companies, making sure that the right ones are applying for PPP. We did not look at this as a government handout for everybody and their children. You know, I would say about half of our companies qualified for PPP, and they are the ones that applied. So we were able to work with the founders to make sure they applied properly, that they should be applying, that they were going to meet the standards that were required. We felt that they should do it. And then phase three was, this is not going to be 1 or 2 months. Let's start to really work with you on what the new world's going to look like and what adjustments you've had. So we've had a number of our portfolio companies that have done exceptionally well, you know, Noteworth in the digital health space, exceptionally accelerated because of it, as did other ones. And then, you know, what we're working with our companies now on is the remote. What's it like to be remote? Have a remote workforce? How do you manage a remote workforce? How do you have a corporate culture? So that's on the portfolio side. On the Laconia internal side, operational side, you know, the six of us, we've all gone remote, although I am working from my office today. I'm the only one that comes in because it's better than being home with the kids all doing their schoolwork and the wife doing her job. But we meet as a firm at 9 o'clock every morning and we just do a quick 5-10 minute check-in. We use Slack a lot more now than we ever have. Mm-hmm. And we do, you know, obviously like everybody else, we're on Zoom calls all day long. Deal flow has not changed. It's been great. I think the challenge, and I'm speaking for myself, not my other partners, because one of our partners, Jerry Karlova, is, you know, younger and much more adapted to this. I need to meet people in person. Mm-hmm. And so we invest in the Northeast so that we can be close by to help the portfolio, the founders, on a minute's notice and meet with them. It's hard to develop a relationship in Zoom. It's hard to want to write a $1 million check to somebody that you've never broken bread with. Mm-hmm. So we've done a couple deals during COVID, but those are people that we've met prior to it. And we are in the middle of due diligence in a couple other deals. We'd be the very first time we've never really met them face to face. So this is something as an old guy that I'm trying to overcome. And then Jerry is pushing me to be like, we can do this. We're good. Let's go.
Well, you know, it's funny because I tend to agree with you on this. You can do it, but there is something about, especially when you're dealing with large sums of money, there's something about sitting down with someone and meeting them and, you know, getting to know them on a certain level. You just can't do it over Zoom, correct?
Yeah, you can't. Listen, I still come in and I still meet with all of our founders probably once a month or once every 6 to 8 weeks. I'll meet with them socially, distantly acceptable. But it's remarkable the conversations you're able to have face-to-face that you just can't have through Zoom. It's remarkable the way you can get to meet somebody and learn who they are over a meal or going for a walk in the park and seeing their body language and just getting that comfort level. We've tried different things and we're getting better at it, but I'm a people person and I just need to see that. And even the deals that we're due diligence right now, I'll go to Boston, I'll go to Philly, I'll go to DC and I'll say, I'm coming down. I know you might not be comfortable with it. Let's go for a walk. It's been 8 feet away, 10 feet away from me. Mm. We'll eat outside at two tables, but I need to be in the, need to be live.
So speaking, I mean, we've talked about remote employment and remote work. So from a VC standpoint, that's always been a, you know, an office has always been a big part of funding a company. Do you actually take that into account now? Or do you say, well, do you really need an office?
I don't know if we were smart or lucky. So I'm going to go with lucky that we invested in a company called Weathos. And it was the first deal we did in 2019 that was fully remote. One founder was in Brooklyn. Another founder was in Montauk. Another, you know, there was no office at all. It's really been a remarkable experience to try to work with them and try to get our head out of the traditional world of, I want to walk in the office. I want to see the culture building and all that. And so we've learned a lot from Rachel and Claire, the founders, on exactly what they're doing to instill culture in the company, to instill culture. It has been a good lesson. And so when we hit COVID, we've been able to take a lot of the lessons and learnings that we had with them to other companies.
Mm. Makes sense. And you, I don't think you were so much lucky as, because correct me if I'm wrong, when you invest in a company, you're investing in the people, right?
We are, but I will tell you, and they know, we were going back and forth. Jerry sourced the deal. Rachel and Claire are unbelievably smart women. And I was still trying to get over as my partner, David, was like, they might need to have an office someday. And as they were talking about hiring people for the roles, we were like, you need a certain person who can work from home. And this is pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. And you're like, some people, I love going to the office. I love coming to the office, the energy, you know, the water cooler talk with my partners and the team. Awesome. And so there was a lot of going back and forth, but, you know, Jerry and David and I work as a team, and Jerry was like, I believe in them and we're going to learn from this. And we like the business. We like them. So we did that leap of faith, not knowing how much it would come up to help us long-term as we went into COVID.
Yeah.
Just so when you're... we'll take a little bit of both.
Yeah.
I listened to my partners and two, we were lucky.
Well, Finney, what do you think is the future of remote employment, you know, from just a general perspective, since it appears to be here to stay for at least another 6 months?
So I think a few things. I think it's good for some people. I don't think it's good for other people. So as I have a 24-year-old son who's now is starting his second year in the workforce, and he wants to go back to the office. You know, he wants to be able to develop the necessary skills to grow his career and to work from home and be on a couch. You lose so much. You lose the natural conversation that happens in an office. You lose the opportunity for your boss to pull you in a meeting that you otherwise would not have been invited to. You lose that opportunity to turn around to somebody and say, hey, can I ask you a quick question on something? All of those skills. So I think for people in their 20s, I think it's really important for them to get back into the office. Mm-hmm. I think it's important for companies to have offices. You know, you talk to companies at General Atlantic and other ones, their biggest challenge is how do they mentor that next generation of employees? And they're all come up with places where ways of doing that. When you get to your 30s and 40s and you have young kids, I think you can be hybrid. I don't mm-hmm. think it's all or nothing. I think there's going to be an opportunity where, let's say your child's in a soccer game in the afternoon and you want to go see it. And I really was blessed enough to have flexibility where I was able to always see my kids' sports events. And I know how much it meant to me and how much it means to them. Or better, I'll kill them. I think that, you know, when I say to my boss at the time, hey, listen, I'm going to work from home today, I think it was a natural for them to say, okay, you're, quote, working from home today. I think now we can sit there. Someone said to me, listen, I'm going to work from home today and catch my kids' game at 4:00. The tools are now there that I know they're working.
Yeah.
So I think there's going to be a hybrid in the 30s and 40s. And then the 50 pluses where I'm definitely am. I think it's going to be interesting. You know, can I do my job from somewhere else? Do I need to live in New York City?
Right. Yeah. And I was in the same boat as you. I was actually my son's hockey and baseball coach. And I think one thing that people, you don't realize is when your company gives you that freedom, you tend to work a little, you work harder for that company because you really appreciate the fact that you do get that time.
Yep, you do. And right. It's, you know, as a parent, you can't place enough value on that time. Like, my daughter just got into college and I can't believe because of COVID, I'll never see another sport event. You know, they're not the type of athletes they're going to play in college.
Right.
So I can't believe last winter was the last basketball game I'll ever see her play. It crushes me.
That's tough. I know. Interesting. Yeah, no, I was very fortunate that actually when my son got to be a man, when he turned 18, he actually joined my men's hockey team. So I actually got that enjoyment.
No, oh, that's awesome. That's awesome.
I played with him 7 years.
Oh my, that's a blessing. So I would say the one big blessing, and there's been a couple things that have come out of COVID was, you know, I had my 24, my 21 and my 18 under the same roof with no girlfriends, boyfriends, spouses, children. It was just us. And the conversations we had at night were amazing. But I also remember, you know, going to the tennis court in the town and playing tennis with my daughter. And she see me tear up. She's like, why? I'm like, I can't believe we're doing this. This is so great.
It is. I know. And I don't think they realize it yet how cool it is to us. Cause I mean, I remember especially watching my son go from this 18-year-old kid that was fast, but you know, could get pushed around by grown men to when he left, he was the best player in the league.
Right. Exactly.
It's like, he's still fast and now he's strong.
Exactly, which is scary. No, it's great.
Yeah. So, well, Jeff, it's been fun talking to you. I wish Laconia all the luck in the world. It sounds like you don't need it. It sounds like you got a good thing going there. And have a great.
We got a great thing going. We've got a great, great thing going.
Have a great 2021.
Thank you very much. And thanks. And wish you all the best.
Thank you.